Welcome, friends, to Season 2, Episode 6 of the Judo Edit Podcast. I'm so glad you tuned in today because we have a lighter-hearted discussion for your listening pleasure. If you've ever wanted to know what it feels like to be stuck in a Russian airport for 24 hours, or first lock eyes with your husband in the stands of a sports stadium, then you are in the right place. Enter Hannah Martin, National Representative of the United States of America at 63 kilograms. Hannah has been competing on the world stage since 2004 and is currently competing on the international judo circuit in the lead up to the 2020 or 2021 Olympic Games. Hannah was my guest for episode 1 of this season, and she was so fun to talk with, I knew I had to pull her on for a second interview. So, stay tuned. Before we start, have you ever thought of starting your own judo club? Because, you know, you've done hundreds of breakfalls and thousands of wichikomi, and maybe it would feel great to pass on all that experience. Well, if you are based in New South Wales and starting a judo club is something which has crossed your mind, then listen closely. Judo New South Wales are offering free workshops for all you soon-to-be coaches so that you can get started straight away. And no, I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm actually trying to connect you with financing, free mentoring, and free marketing guidance resources. So, if you've been feeling the itch to inspire a new generation of judoka, click on the link in the description below and you could be running your own dojo by this time next year.
Welcome, Hannah. How are you going today?
It's going good. Thanks for having me on the Judo Edit again. I'm very happy to be back.
So what's the last couple of months been like for you? Obviously, the last time we spoke, the coronavirus lockdowns had just sort of started. What sort of happened in your world since then?
In my world since then, I have been home.
It's been a very small world.
Yeah, and I've been home. I've been in Germany. I have not traveled, which is like so strange for me because I'm used to traveling like almost every other weekend. And yeah, I was working out at home with my husband for like, I guess like 6-7 weeks. We were working out together, and yeah, it's been a different kind of year than I've expected.
I guess, even though you haven't been competing, I wanted to take you back to your childhood and talk a little bit about some of your childhood competitions. Can you remember, what is your first memory of winning in a judo competition?
My first memory, I probably won a couple other competitions before that, but I don't really remember because it was like back in, I don't know, 99, 98. I guess my first one was winning, it's called the AMCAN International. So it's like kind of like the international tournament between USA and Canada. And this tournament is so cool because it gives like the biggest trophies of like all the competitions. Like usually you get a medal, but this tournament gives you like a really big trophy. Like when you're like 9 years old, it's like as tall as you.
Yeah.
So I remember like my whole year or whatever was like this highlight. It was like during Memorial Day weekend. It's like an American holiday. And we go to Buffalo. It's like 5 hours away from where I live. And it's like this big thing. We stay in a hotel. And I was like, all right, I'm preparing for this competition. So I like would train extra hard during, I don't train extra hard for a 9 year old. I'm really sure what I did, but I remember like, I would like be mentally preparing for this competition. And it's so crazy as a little kid. So yeah, when I won this competition, I was like so excited. And I remember like my coach being so happy, and I brought my trophy home to all my friends and family. And I was just like carrying it around and taking pictures with it for like a week. I don't know. That's like one of my,
it's a big deal when you're a kid.
Yeah, like I still actually have this trophy like somewhere like in my parents' house. Like I'm never gonna throw it away because it's like a really like great memory for me.
Yeah, for sure. And like the great thing is like when you're a kid as well, you take the picture, and because you're physically so small, it makes the trophy look bigger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I have like my mom has a picture somewhere, and I just remember like coming home and like she showed like all my aunts and uncles, and I showed my brother, which was like even like, I don't know, for me it was like, oh, look at this, because he's like younger than me. He didn't go.
Yeah,
I don't know, it was a good little memory.
Yeah. So you would probably have a ton of medals and trophies. Do you keep all of them still?
Yeah, I keep all of them. I actually like, I keep my favorite ones like out on the wall, so it's like, you know, just for a good motivation. And I have like a bunch of medals in a duffel bag in my closet because there's just so many from like when I was a kid, you know, because I went to all these like local events and some of these smaller national events I went to. And yeah, so I kind of keep them in a bag because there's just so many of them.
Yeah,
and they're all my parents, they're all my parents' house. Like they're not even in Germany where I'm living at the moment, so even like my other medals are in my room in my parents' house. So
Yeah.
I get to see them so much.
For sure. Like, it would probably weigh a lot just to try and, you know, take them on a plane.
Yeah.
Germany. So I can see why that would be the logical decision. And so I guess now, even as you are competing on the world circuit, do you feel nervous or intimidated before a competition?
I always have a little bit of competition anxiety, you know, like I always feel tightness in my stomach and my chest, but like I actually welcome it because I know like if I'm not nervous, then I don't care about my performance. So like having the nerves, it gets me more ready and mentally prepared to compete. So I welcome it. I used to hate it. I used to hate the feeling, you know, like this like tightness in your stomach and your chest and you feel like you can't move sometimes, but I'm not like that anymore. I'm a little bit more, I'm used to the feelings, but I think if you have a little bit nervous feelings, it's a good thing to be nervous before you compete.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And even on competition day, do you ever go through times when you feel like you're almost a little bit too nervous?
Yeah. You know, some tournaments, cause you know, on the circuit, there's like, you know, everyone is so good. Like every competitor you fight is like, you know, everyone's in the top level, top shape, everyone's elite athletes. And sometimes you get like these draws where it's like, wow, like this is a really hard draw, and it makes you extra nervous because you're like, you feel like you prepared so well, and then you're like, so for example, like in my last competition, which was in Dusseldorf, which was in Germany, like in February, I had Toshiro Miko in the first round. She's from Japan.
Oh, that's tough.
She's number two in the world, and I was just, you know, I felt so great preparing for this competition. I felt ready, and then I saw my draw, which is, you know, kind of it's really bad to look at your draw and then like feel like, oh no, you know, it's Japan, because you should always feel like you can beat anybody, you know, no matter what, anybody can lose. But in this day, I was a little bit nervous because I was like, oh man, because like, I felt I had such high expectations for myself, and then I was like, wow, this girl is just amazing. So I kind of like gave myself a little bit of extra tournament anxiety that day. So maybe I lost to her. She won the tournament actually, but
at least that's a good thing. You lost to the winner, right?
Yeah, I guess so. But I don't know. Like when you go to a competition, like you don't want to be the loser. You want to be the winner. So like, that's like my last tournament memory right now. So I want to like go back and compete and like, I don't feel so great about how I approached this competition. So I want to have a redo.
Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, you mentioned there you look at the draw. Are you one of the athletes that looks at the draw as soon as it comes out? Or do you sort of wait until the, you know, the morning of the competition while you're warming up? Or how soon do you look at the draw?
I can't wait. I always look at it right away, which is, I think, might be a bad thing because it's a 3-day competition and I always fight the second day. So it's like, I'm looking at the draw like on Thursday and waiting 2 days to like compete. So I was going to try a different method for Morocco, which was canceled, which was like the next competition. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, I'm going to, you know, just focus on weighing in, eating a good dinner. And then I'm going to wake up in the morning. And I'm going to look at my draw, which is like completely different for me. Cause I'm like very like, I need to know everything. I need to be prepared for it and to look at videos of my competition. And I was like, gonna try something different because I was like, maybe this will help with my like anxiety, you know, maybe like it won't make me as nervous because I'll just be going to the competition preparing like I always do and then just look and then, you know, that's it, you know.
Yeah,
so I didn't get the chance to try that method, so I don't know how it works for me, but so yeah, I guess I look at the draw usually.
Yeah, fair enough, because I guess in judo like you sort of also need to be prepared for the exact opponent you're fighting. Like
exactly
knowing their style. So pros and cons, it'll be interesting to see if waiting to look at the draw a little bit later will be helpful.
Yeah, I wanted to try it out, you know, I was like, I was ready to test it out and I didn't get a chance to because coronavirus stuff. So.
Yeah. One of the things that you mentioned last time we spoke is that you were sort of previously, I guess when you started competing internationally, you were sort of sitting in between weight classes and was having a little bit of difficulty making the 57 kilo weight class. So I understand you now compete at 63. For how long were you fighting at 57 kilo and when did you decide to move up a division?
I was fighting 57 kilos, I believe, like since I was cadet age. So I think that's like when I was like 15 until 2011, which I was, hold on, I gotta think how old I was. That's 9 years ago, correct? Wow, I'm doing some math right now. I was like 23 or something. Yeah, I think I was doing, so I was fighting a long time in this weight division. So yeah, from 15 years old to like 23 years old, 24 years old, I was fighting 57 kilos. And, you know, your body changes like so much from 15 to, you know, adult. So yeah. I was trying to hold on to this like unrealistic weight for way too long. Like I think I should have moved up like after 2008, which like I competed in the Olympic trials. Mm-hmm. When there used to be Olympic trials, and I did really well there. And then after that, I was 21 in 2008. So that means I was, hold on.
A little bit younger than now.
Can't you tell that my age is like, my math is so bad.
It's okay. I was on the spot.
23. So yeah, I was competing. That's my last time I fought. I was 23. Yeah, so I think I should have moved up. And so, like, for 2 or 3 years, I was just, like, on the struggle bus of making weight. And it was just, like, I wasn't even focusing on, like, judo. I was just focusing on, like, what I was putting in my mouth and how much I had to run. And it was just not a good time for me.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have any close calls where you were, you know, you weren't sure you were going to make it?
Oh, yeah, I've had many. Like, one specifically was, like, the Miami World Cup. So we used to have like a Pan American Open now they would call it today. But on Monday I weighed myself because it was after the weekend and I was like, all right, like I got to weigh myself Monday and I weigh in on Saturday. So I weighed myself after judo on Monday and I was like 64 kilos. And I was
for
like,
57.
Oh, yeah. And it was after judo and I was like feeling actually very skinny. I was like, oh, I feel skinny. I look really good. Like I was looking really fit.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, I have to be like at least like 61 kilos. That's okay. Cause I could always make it kind of easy if I was like 61. And I looked and I was like, oh no, 64 kilos. And it was like after judo. So that means I must have lost like 1 or 2 kilos like during judo, you know?
Yeah.
And I like looked at my coach and I was like, I told him how much I was. And he was like, all right, well, you know, this week, you have to just focus on making weight. You have to do it. You have to do whatever it takes to make weight because I was like selected by USA Judo because they only could have 4 people at the time to compete in this competition, kind of like Grand Prix now when it's like the home competition, like they only have 4 people from mm-hmm. the home country competing. So I was like selected to compete there and it would have looked really bad for me if I didn't make the weight. So yeah, every single day I was running in plastics, so you know, like the plastic suits.
Yeah, yeah.
For like the morning, I would run like 40 minutes, and then at night after judo, I also would run for another 40 minutes. And yeah, I was just running and running and running, and I could barely do judo that week because I was just so, I had no energy. I arrived in Miami, it was in the summertime, so Miami in the summer is like insane, especially with the humidity. It's so warm.
Yeah.
So I remember like running on a golf course, like in this resort, I guess we were staying at like this like nice hotel and there was like a golf course.
Like these old people like with their golf clubs, like what is that woman doing?
Oh yeah. It was like that. I was running around like with my literally cause it's so warm. Like it's above like 30 degrees, you know, like it's really bad and the humidity is like 100% and you're wearing this plastic suit and running with, you know, in the middle of the summer and people are like looking at you like, wow, like who is this person? Why is she doing this?
Is she running?
I remember I was
mental institution. Like
that's what it looks like. I was like, I would run, but I remember this. I would run for like 10 seconds, and I would just like fall to the ground because I had like no energy. And my like friend Cammy, she's my teammate, she was like picking me up and like helping me. This whole like she was such an angel. Like I was being like really dramatic and really 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 bad, like
yeah.
I had no more energy. I was like completely sucked out,
like when you're that tired, you have no emotional control, right?
Yeah. And I was like crying and I remember like I was also in the sauna. I paid for the sauna because it was like a spa. It was a really nice sauna, which is mm-hmm. so annoying. Like you go to, you're cutting weight and there's this like beautiful spa you go to and they have like cucumber water. You can't drink it, but you look at it and you're like, oh. You're like, look, and it's like right in front of the sauna too. Like there's like the window for the sauna. You're like looking at the cucumber water. Like, oh my God. Like that's all I want right now. This is everything I ever wanted. It's a sad feeling when you're in that state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like lying on the ground crying in the sauna. And yeah, it was, that's what I remember. It would have been a very emotional time. I made weight though.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. I know. I don't know how, but I was so sucked out. I couldn't, and this is when they had the weigh-ins in the morning. They used to have the weigh-ins in the morning. Yeah. I think after 2012 or something, they changed it to the nighttime, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But so I remember I couldn't sleep the night before because I was just so hot. I was so dehydrated. So I like grabbed a pillow and I was sleeping on like the bathroom floor because the bathroom floor is really cold. You know, it's like really, really cold compared to the bed is like too warm.
Yeah.
I was like laying on the bathroom floor for waiting till 6 o'clock to arrive. And yeah.
It's been like one of the longest nights of life.
Oh yeah, it was. It was horrible. And I was just like, and I kept looking at the bathroom sink and I was like, oh man, water. And I would like, just, you know, put my mouth under the water and swish it out and spit it out and just like count down the time until I could drink water.
Yeah.
And
that's crazy.
I think just, and then the thing is, I think my body just didn't want me to be 57 kilos anymore. Like it was like impossible for me to make it, but I kept, this is 2010 when I did this, and I continued to make weight until 2011. So I still did this for one more year.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know why.
There's a lot of mental strength just to do that.
Like, yeah. I'm like, I have PTSD. Like I see like people making weight and cutting weight now, like some of my teammates, and I just get this like feeling in my mouth and I can smell the plastic smell, you know. I don't know how, I still smell it, like when you're wearing that plastic suit, you like, it has a like smell. I don't know if you ever wore them before, but
I've worn it maybe twice.
Oh okay, that's good. That's really good.
But yeah, I agree, it's not a great suit to, it's not very comfortable.
Yeah, it's not comfortable. And if this plastic suit is like still wet and you put it back on your body, and I don't know.
Dry properly, do they?
No. So it's a nasty memory I have.
Oh my goodness. And how did you go in that competition? Did you end up fighting okay? Or?
I got 7th place. I don't know how. I think I won two matches, and I lost two, obviously.
Yeah.
I lost to like Brazil and I think Colombia. I think in my last fight though, I was kind of just like completely dead. You know, I had like nothing left.
Yeah,
and I think sure. I lost because I had nothing in the tank, no energy.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, choosing a weight division and the process around managing weight is like a hugely personal thing. And it's very different for everyone involved. But what did it feel like for you when you moved up to 63? Is because you've been forcing yourself to stay at a certain weight for so long?
Yeah, it was first a relief because I was like finally not killing myself and I was able to eat. The only thing is I like overdid it. Like I started eating like too much because I was like, oh, I never have to make weight again. Like this is great. This is amazing. And so I was eating like way too much. Like literally like I'm going to say like I was binge eating like every single night because I was just like wanting to feel the feeling of being full. So I kind of had like some problems actually because I was so happy I didn't have to make weight. And then I think I got up to like 68, 69 kilos, which is really big for me. So I was like not fitting into my clothes and my gi was feeling tight. And I went to Samoa actually. There was a World Cup in Samoa, which is like kind of close to where you are, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not really sure.
A lot of Australians used to go there. I don't know if it still runs.
No. It doesn't run anymore. So I went there and it was a long plane ride, of course. And I was eating everything on the plane, drinking everything. So I was like, wow, I can eat and drink. And I arrived in Samoa and I was like 69 kilos, which is like, I had to make 63. So that's a big weight cut. And I was like, oh my God, I'm cutting the same weight as I did before. Like what the, you know, like I was so... oh my God, what am I doing to myself? And I literally was doing the thing where I wasn't as bad as before. Like I wasn't dehydrated. I could still eat and drink a little, but I was running and running and running. I remember I had to wake up because we didn't have a scale in our hotel. And I woke up the morning of, and I was like running outside, like it was like the forest or something. I don't know. Samoa is really cool. I was running outside like 5 in the morning, like with my plastics on, like, oh my God, I'm not going to make 63. This is going to be so embarrassing. Everyone was like,
we're halfway around the world.
Yeah, and I did really bad this competition because I wasn't mentally like ready for 63. I guess I just didn't take it seriously. And after that competition, I came back in that was the end of 2011, came back 2012. And I was like a different person. I was like, really, I decided to like get myself in shape, become a really strong 63. And that's when things all changed for me in 2012. Yeah. As far as like being more professional with my weight. And now I have no problems with my weight. Actually, like, I'm a little bit too small for 63 now, so.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that you didn't have to, like, worry about making weight at all, and I thought that was quite a unique thing for a judoka on the circuit, but it's, at least it sounds like you've got your weight management process down.
Yeah, it's really, it's actually really nice, really easy. Like, the heaviest I get is, like, 64 and a half, 65 sometimes, but that's after, like, eating, you know, and drinking, whatever.
Yeah.
And, yeah, after I do, like, a judo workout, I always weigh 63.5. So yeah. My challenge is like, yeah, I'm just trying to put on more muscle and gain weight, but that's been the challenge for like the last 3 years, is getting bigger.
Yeah.
Which is funny, right? Everyone's like, it should be easy to get big. And I'm like, I don't know why. Now this has been the challenge to put on a little bit more weight, because like everyone's a little bit taller than me, so that everyone kind of walks around a little bit heavier. So I'm trying to get a little bit heavier, but it's not like the biggest deal in the world, because I have a lot of, I'm very strong for my size.
You're one of the lucky people that can be really strong without, you know, being really heavy.
Yeah, everyone's like, you're so strong. How much do you weigh? 66? And I'm like, no.
Yeah, so, you know, you 2012, when you decided to get your act together a little bit and be more professional, what were the sort of changes that you put in place? Did you put in like some guidelines for yourself, or like any processes?
You know what's kind of cool? I started doing CrossFit in 2012, just like fun, just to get myself like back in shape, because I didn't have anyone to tell me how to do any lift or anything. Like, I just did everything myself.
Yeah.
So I just went to CrossFit to like learn a little bit about like lifting and like how to get in shape, because I always saw all these girls, they're freaking in shape, and I was like, man, I get to look like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to CrossFit, and I think I like, this, my mentality changed a little bit, like about pushing past and pushing more and pushing, because in CrossFit, you're pushing like to your freaking max, you know, like, I think, I don't know if you're aware of like no CrossFit, but it's like insane.
Yeah, I did CrossFit for like a year or two, a couple of months.
Oh, cool.
So I agree. Yeah, it's really fun.
It's really fun, and you're pushing yourself past what you think you can push.
Mm-hmm.
So I would do that in CrossFit. And then I was like, I should do this in judo. Like, I need to push myself past to what I think I can do. And I think that just like changed like more my mentality and how I approach like my diet, my, you know, mental training, and yeah, the way I approach judo. Like, I think it helped me a lot. So I stopped doing CrossFit and just started focusing on judo, because, you know, if you do CrossFit like every day or like three or four times a week, like, it's really hard to do a good judo training.
Yeah.
It kills you, you know?
Yeah. It's like just drains your energy systems, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I did this, but I used to do a CrossFit workout like before judo, and then I go to judo and do judo, and I'm like, how the hell did I do that? After working a server shift,
yeah.
I would go to CrossFit and then do judo. I'm like, man, I was like Superwoman back in the day. I can't even do that anymore. There's no way.
Just on your feet the whole day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a psycho.
And so, you know, apart from the post-training ice cream that you usually have, what does your diet look like now?
Pretty normal. I wake up, I usually eat something before the gym, because I go training in the gym in the morning, or I do like a run in the morning, or now I've been doing yoga, do yoga in the morning too.
Mm-hmm.
So I eat something kind of small, but enough to keep me for like an hour at the gym. Mm-hmm. And I come back home and I actually have like a second breakfast, which is like Skyr, it's like a really high protein yogurt with granola and fruit. And that's my morning. And then lunch, I have like a normal lunch. So whatever I usually want, like, I'll eat whatever I want for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll have like a snack before judo. And then I eat dinner after judo with a bowl of ice cream or some other kind of snack.
Yeah.
So I eat just pretty normally. And I drink a lot of water, like a lot of water, because it's really good for you. And you know, I only drink one coffee a day. I think caffeine isn't the best for you because it dehydrates you. So I kind of just limit myself to one, unless I'm very, very tired and need more. And yeah, that's it.
Yeah. No, that's so good. It sounds like very intuitive and very, very natural, actually.
Yeah. I just feed my body what I feel like it needs. And I don't think about it too much. And I don't have anxiety about eating, or I don't feel like I have to eat less or more. I just kind of just fuel my body to what I feel like it needs. And I make sure I eat like the right food. Like I eat a lot of vegetables and a lot of fruit and good meats and stuff like that. So I'm not eating a lot of like processed food, but yeah, I just eat to fuel.
You know, making weight and diet and things is a big part of judo. Did you have nutritionists on the USA team growing up, or like anyone advising around, oh, you should be this weight division, or maybe you should try doing these practices to help you make weight? Was there ever any formal coaching around that?
You know, no. Actually, when I was growing up, when I really needed it the most, we had no access to a nutritionist or anything like that. And, you know, I was young, so I only listened to, like, my coach and people that I saw above me, like, older people. So there was one of the older girls who was competing when I was, like, a junior. She like, introduced me to plastics. And I was like, oh, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. Because I never knew, like, there was plastics. And then mm-hmm. I'm like, man, I wish I never was introduced to this. But in my coach, he kind of, like, old school. So, like, he didn't, you know, his thing was, like, you just have to run and you eat less. That was it. No cookies, no ice cream. But no, like, real plan. And, like, now today, like, I have access, or we have access now to, like, a nutritionist who, like, actually gave me a plan to, like, gain weight and gain muscle. So, I mean, I try to follow it, but it's, like, a lot of food, like, more than I like to eat. Yeah, and it's, like, you know, 3 boiled eggs in the morning plus, like, toast, and I'm, like, oh, my God, it's so, I'll feel sick when I'm, like, lifting, you know? So, yeah, I didn't have a lot of access. I had actually no access to that, and actually at this time, too, like, you know, the internet was just, like, becoming so crazy, like, the internet didn't have as much information as today, because I guess I would have like looked up stuff online and stuff like that, but I had no guidance when I was younger about how to like make weight. So that's why I did what I was told to do by like older athletes.
I guess it's good now that that's becoming more accessible, the fact that, you know, having professional guidance around weight management is becoming more accessible, especially for young girls.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think there's just so much more information now, and there's just so much more awesome for people that are growing up in the sport and want to take it to the next level.
Yeah, for sure. And thank you for sharing like your experience there, because I think it's also a part of the overarching message that you don't always have to fight the growth of your body to stay at a weight division.
Yeah, and I think like I tell people now, like parents ask me, oh, should my daughter be this and that, and I'm like, you know, you should just let your daughter, because she's 14 15 years old, just let her fight whatever she is. Don't like put this cutting weight mentality into her head until it's time to decide, you know, because when you're a junior or cadet, like if you are like, yeah, like a kilo over, yeah, you can, I think it's okay to lose a kilo, but if you're like 3 or 4 kilos over, 5 kilos over, no way. You should not make them cut weight, especially a female, because like then you're dealing with like really messing up your body, and then you're dealing with a bunch of hormones, and then you don't get your period, and then it's like, yeah, it's really not good for you. Like I always it's a horrible thing for you. So just let your body do its natural thing and just be healthy. That's what I always tell parents who are like always like on the fence of what they should tell their kids, if they should make weight and stuff like that.
That's really solid advice, and I can hear your experience showing through there.
Also, it affects your mentality. Really, it really messes with your mentality. You look in the mirror and you think you're fat just because you're not weighing 57 kilos, you know. So
yeah,
you need to like have a healthy lifestyle. It's cutting weight is not for everyone, you know.
No, and it's definitely like a, you know, fluctuating up 5 kilos and down another 5 kilos on a regular basis isn't a great lifestyle either.
No.
Okay, cool. So let's change direction a little bit to more of the recent history. So you're coached by your husband, Miguel. First of all, how did you meet him?
We met in Russia, actually, in Chelyabinsk in 2014 at the World Championships. We didn't really talk, though. We just, like, saw each other kind of thing, you know? It was, like, one of those weird things where, like, you see a person in the stands and you're like, oh, who's that, you know? And then he messaged me on Instagram like 3 months later, and we started talking like on Instagram, and then we started talking on Skype, and then eventually I went and met him because he was living in Denmark at the time. He was national coach for Denmark, and so I went to Denmark to visit him because I was like, all right, we have to meet in person. We've been talking for 3 months, and I was in Tunisia for a competition, so yeah, we just met, and then yeah, since then we've been together since 2015. So we met in 2015, like, in person, not online.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then we got married in 2017. Mm-hmm. In Lisbon. He's actually Portuguese. So we got married in Lisbon in 2017 after the World Championships in Budapest. And then he got a new job in Germany. So now we're living in Germany. Now he works for the Judo German Federation. He's like a national coach. He's a good coach here.
So.
Yeah. I forgot his title. I don't remember what it was, but it was a little good love story.
Yeah.
Through judo.
Through judo and through Instagram, and it sounds like a really international jet-setting relationship.
Yeah, you know, we never would see each other because I was in USA and he was in Europe, and we always would see each other like every competition. So like, we were able to keep the long distance thing going for a really long time. And then I would, in between the competitions, I would visit him and stay in Europe. And yeah, it worked out, and we got married. And it's just a crazy story because I just can't believe like I'm living in Europe now. You know, never would have expected this.
What's it like being coached by Miguel in terms of, you know, he's so close to you, he's your husband. Do you ever get sick of him? Do you guys get into arguments, or does it work really well because you understand each other?
We don't fight a lot, but we get into arguments because of judo, because I think I'm a very hard person to coach, because there's like, I can't separate the relationship and the coach thing. Like, he's in coach mode and I'm like still relationship mode, and I'm like, oh my God, like, why are you yelling at me? Why are you telling me what to do? Like, I get so angry, and then I get, you know, like all this attitude. So I'm still struggling with him coaching me, and cause I can't separate the two, and he can separate the two, like, no problem. Like, once it's coach mode, once we're in the judo mat and once we're training in our house, which was really tough, he just is able to coach me and not worry about like the relationship part of it. And like, I don't know, I don't leave it on the mat, I take it home with me, you know. It's been hard for me to separate it, but it's really great also because we have the same schedule, and he really like is looking out for my best interest. It's really nice too because he's really invested in me, and he loves me, wants to see me do well. And it's hard for me to separate the coach relationship thing, but I'm still working on it.
Hey friends, I hope you've been enjoying this episode so far. If you've been doing your best to keep up the training during these strange times, I relate. Why don't you make tomorrow's workout a little more exciting and check out some new workout gear? I have a special offer for you from a company called Acta Wear. These guys have functional and stylish workout clothes for women and men that you'll be proud to wear at the gym or beneath your judo gi. For listening to this podcast, you get a special 15% off. Just head to actawear.com, that's actawear.com, and use the code JUDO15. Enjoy.
Because I was going to ask about what it's like for you having to time manage, you know, studying and training at the same time.
I'm a crazy person where I like schedule everything. Like, I literally write down my schedule like from every day. So I schedule like, always schedule my school time like in between my trainings. Like right after I do lifting, I will do like 1 or 2 hours of studying. So I'm like very motivated and I can like self-motivate. I don't need to go to school. I don't need to actually physically be in class to study.
Yeah.
So I'm just one of the type A people that like are just like, let's go. And I really am like scheduled, and like I'm like a little crazy with the calendar stuff. Like, so I'm able to manage my time really well, and I have a 4.0 GPA, so I'm doing really well. Maybe because I have no competitions, but no, I had a 4.0. I had a 4.0 before, so it's I don't know. I really like to have a lot of things going on during the day, so I think school helps me have a balance and not always think about judo 24/7.
Yeah, you know? That's awesome. And what was it like even when if you're traveling and you're trying to study at the same time, do you have to study on the plane, or what did you do?
I try to front the work. I try to do as much as possible before, because sometimes some places you go to, they have like the worst Wi-Fi, and then you really can't do any work or anything like that. So I try my best to do as much as I can before I leave for the competition. But like if I'm gone for like 1 or 2 weeks, then I have to just work with the whatever Wi-Fi they have, or just do the work like in between training sessions and stuff, or you know, during the competition, which is a little bit more of a struggle. But I always find a little bit of downtime instead of like, you know, hanging out with like the team, I just go back to my room and just study a little bit, and just because you have to do it, you know, like it's,
yeah,
I'm like, I don't want to get bad grades. So I really go and I really focus on it.
Were you doing a media degree?
Yep. I'm getting my degree in business communications. So I want to focus on more like social media, and I'm going to work on my MBA in marketing. So I want to get into like social media marketing and stuff like that. And I would like to work for like, I would like to work for USA Judo or like even the IJF and work with their media and help and stay in judo, because I really want to like be involved in the sport. So something I'm looking into. Yeah, because I think I've been involved in judo for 20 plus years and I have a lot to offer. Like, I know the sport and I think I can help out a lot. And I like to give back to the sport, of course, because I don't really want to be a coach or anything like that. So this is my way of getting back, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So if anyone from the IJF is listening out there,
I know. Gotta like send this podcast. Hey, let's listen to this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Where do you think judo media is placed at the moment? Because obviously the IJF has been producing some like amazing video content, but like I wanted to get your opinion on how do you think it sort of fits in with the rest of the sporting world, and where do you think it could be improved?
I think the IJF is doing a really great job with their media. Like they make great videos. They are always coming up with new content, you know, interviewing the top athletes, which I think is so good, because it's good to see like behind the scenes. Like everyone loves to see behind the scenes content. So they're doing great. And I think like almost every organization, judo organization, should kind of follow what they're doing. But I think the problem is they don't have like the same resources as the IJF. Like they have like a ton of resources so they can pay money to have people make videos and come out with all this great content online. Social media is more like a cost-effective way to promote judo. Like IJF has full-time staff doing like the media and the marketing and social media stuff. So that's why it looks so good. So I think the other organizations, not just USA Judo, like the other judo organizations don't have someone full-time to like marketing the sport and promoting the sport in their country.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it's going to come down to like in the future, because everything is kind of going to media, like online media and stuff like that, digital marketing. And in order to like improve the numbers, like maybe even like where you're from too, you need someone full time and you need like to work on it. Cause it's a lot of work making content. Like it's very tough.
Yeah. Like it's just time.
It's time consuming. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Cause yeah, you're making videos and like, you know, all the content on, you know, for like websites and stuff like that. It's very hard. And making even just like a nice graphic, you know, it takes time because you want to be like authentic and look good. And, you know, I just want to throw like crap out there. So yeah. Takes a lot of time, and I think the IJF is doing great, and people should other like organizations should follow them. But like, yeah, I said, like resources, which is hard to get.
So in your opinion and from your studies, what's the most high impact way to get the word out there and to share on media if you've got a limited budget?
Using user-generated content.
So user-generated content, interesting.
Say like you're USA Judo and you share like something I post that is related to judo or something like that, or like a workout I do. That like creates a lot of engagement. Also doing a lot of live videos, but that also takes someone to like say like we're doing this podcast right now and we're live on Instagram. Like that would bring in a lot of different people. It helps increase engagement.
yeah, cool. And when you mention engagement, like I don't know if this is going too far into detail, but like what metrics of engagement actually track the best? Is it like if someone likes something or if someone, you know, types something back? What are the key things
there? Engagement is measured by likes, comments, and shares. So really shares helps increase, like if you share something and someone else shares it and someone else shares it, and then you're reaching out to way more than your just initial fan base. That's what really helped increase your brand, you know, like this, you see like sometimes when you're online, you see like more than 1,000 people shared it. That's like really awesome. That means more people than your just initial fan base are reaching out and looking at your things. Yeah. So sharing is the big thing.
But that's actually super interesting, because now I'm thinking like, oh, I need to get everyone to start sharing my podcast content.
Yeah, no, if you want more people to, yeah, exactly. Like if you want more people to hear your podcast, you should get like everyone to share your link and stuff like that, you know? So then someone's going to see like, oh, wow, I really like this, and share it with their friends and stuff like that. It helps.
So good. So let's take a little bit of a left turn and talk about your travels a little bit. Obviously, you've been all around the world with judo. What are some of your highlight memories and travel stories? So, you know, the ones that you'll tell your grandchildren 50 years from now.
I don't know, like, any really good highlight ones. Like, I think I just remember, like, the scary ones or, like, the ones where I was traveling. Like, I was just give one, for example. I was traveling alone. I was in Mongolia for, like, 1.5 weeks alone. So I was the only American there. And my next trip was going to Russia, and I had, like, a visa and everything. So I was in the Mongolian airport, and they were like, you can't fly to Russia today. And I was like, why not? And they're like, because the date, because, like, the flight wasn't the same as my visa. So I had to stay in Mongolia for, like, 2 extra days and I had to buy a new flight. And then I had to stay, and then I went to Russia, like, Moscow, and I had to stay in Moscow for 24 hours, like, the airport for 24 hours. And, like, I'm not even lying. Like, I had to stay for a whole day to wait for this one flight to Tumen. There's only one flight a day to this one specific place in Russia. So I stayed in Moscow for 24 hours. And, like, I'm telling you, like, I walked that airport, like, up and down, like, no other. Like, I've explored that place. And
you know every corner and crevice.
Yeah. I also stayed in, like, I found a hotel in the airport and stayed in this, like, little room with no window. It was so creepy. So I was in Moscow for 24 hours and I arrived in Tumen like 2 hours before the weigh-in. So it took place because I was going to
Tumen. Were you still trying to make 57s at that time?
No way. It was just like 2014.
That's a relief. So,
yeah. So I like arrived there and I was like, I saw like our team manager and he was like, oh my God, thank God you don't have to make weight or else this would be like insane. And I was like, yeah, I arrived there and I was, you know, 63 kilos. I just like couldn't believe like I was in the airport for 24 hours and I was in Mongolia for an extra day and I had like no place to stay. In Mongolia, actually, they were so nice that I went back to the hotel. Yeah. And I was like, hey, like this happened to me and they just let me stay for free, which was like crazy.
Oh, good.
But they're really, Mongolia is like one of my favorite places. Like the people there are just so nice and like welcoming. And yeah, I was so, it was just so awful. Like I was really alone for like 24 hours and my thoughts like, and I had to like buy internet because there was definitely no internet in Moscow. So I bought some internet there. And
headed with the rest of your team. Like, guys, I'm still in the airport.
I don't remember. I just remember I told the manager, I was like, yeah, this happened with problems with my visa. There's always problems with our visa because we always do the visas last minute. And that's why the date was probably incorrect. So maybe it was my fault a little bit or who knows whose fault it was, but I got there and I actually had my luggage and everything. So I was really happy about that.
Yes, you didn't lose the luggage.
Yeah.
That is a bonus.
Yeah. So that was like a nightmare, you know, and you know, just like the other things where you lose your luggage and you have to like ask every teammate for like a piece of clothing and a gi and stuff like that. So
like crowdsourced your kit.
Yeah. That's always fun, but you know, the first time I lost my luggage, I like cried and cried and was like, oh my God, I need my judo gi. I can't do it. And now since I lost my luggage so many times, I don't even care anymore. I don't cry anymore, at least. And I just, you know.
Do you bring one with you on carry-on, a gi?
You know, I used to do that and now I just don't because it's just so heavy and it's because I travel so much and I just want to travel with like as light as possible stuff in my bag. So yeah, I used to be like, oh my God, I need to bring my gi. Oh my God, I can't compete without my gi. And now I'm just like, ah, whatever. If it happens, I'll just use the rack gi and it's, you know, out of my control. If I get it, I get it. If I don't, it's okay. I just think it's from many years of just traveling with like a really big ass bag in the back, you know, and or like a little trolley and it's like filled to the brim with all my competition stuff. I just don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
I just bring like an extra pair of clothes in case I don't, because like, you know, when you arrive, you have like your clothes have that like airplane dirt on it, you know what I mean, like smell. So I always bring like an extra pair of underwear, I bring a toothbrush and like a new pair of clothes just so I'm like fresh when I get to the hotel. So
yeah, fair enough. Do you have any other travel tips that you would sort of recommend?
You just got to be like really adaptable because when you're traveling, like anything goes, like you never know what's going to happen. Like you can be stuck in a place for, you know, a day or two, or like you're inside the plane for 5 hours, which has happened, or your plane goes to a different location because of wind or whatever. So you have to really just be ready and open for everything, anything and everything to happen. Like I've been stuck inside airplanes for like a long time, like on the tarmac, just because like there's a storm, you know. And then also like our plane, there's one time I was like trying to travel back to the US and my plane was like mechanically, it was like broken, you know, and we were like trying to get home. It took like me 2 days to get home. I was stuck, just stuck in Berlin for like, I don't know, forever. So you just have to like be adaptable and just, you know, don't freak out if something doesn't go your way, because really everything is out of your control. That's what I've learned through many years of travel, is to not freak out anymore and just let it happen. Just whatever happens, happens. Yeah. As long as you're safe.
Yeah, fair enough. As long as you're safe.
Yeah, safety first. You know, like I used to always be like, ah, I need to get here at this time and blah, blah, blah. And now a stupid plane is broken. And you know what? Like, I'm happy I'm alive. I'd rather be alive than worry about, you know, a competition or miss a competition, you know, like it's better to let the airline do its job instead of get mad at them. You know what I mean?
So far you've had the opportunity to travel around the world. You've had been to a lot of places. What other opportunities has judo opened up for you? I guess even outside of judo that you never would have expected.
Well, I guess, I mean, I met my husband through judo. So like, I just think judo is such a big community. Like, so once you meet somebody, you're always invited to go back there. Like, I've met so many people along the way from different countries and made friends all around the world. So like, I can go anywhere basically around the world and have a judo friend there, you know? So it just has really opened up my world, really.
That's the amazing thing. It's like a worldwide international sort of community.
Yeah, it's really great. And it's like so big, but like I said, so small, because like you see the same people all the time at every competition. And like, I've met so many really, really great people from all over the world. And I will be able to go back there and just visit them like when I'm retired and stuff like that, because just make great friendships on the way.
Yeah, exactly. We talked a little bit last time about how in terms of the role models you had in judo, you mentioned that Sabrina Filsmoser was one of your inspirations.
So. Mm-hmm.
I actually had the honor to talk to Sabrina for one of the previous episodes of the podcast, and I can see now why you spoke so highly of her. Like, she's pretty amazing.
She's amazing. Yeah, like, she's amazing. She's still like unbelievable. She's still competing. Like, I know I saw that actually, and I was like, oh my god, that's so cool. Like, she's one of my favorite people in judo. She's such an inspiration, and I'm happy you got a chance to talk to her. She's a great person.
Yeah, it was actually so fun. She's also a great, just great at telling stories, so it was super easy to
talk with her.
Thing. Yeah, you know, she does a lot of charity work, and we can't all fly helicopters and airdrop to Tommy into Nepal, but what do you want to give back to judo once, even now, or once you finish the sport?
Yeah, you know, I can't even compare myself to what Sabrina's doing, because she's doing amazing work, like really dedicated her whole entire life to judo and giving back to the sport. So what I say is not going to be even as close to as good as her things. Like, you know, I want to get my family into the sport, like my kids, and I want to be able to just be involved in the sport. Like I said, I want to help like USA Judo, like help increase the numbers and, you know, create a team for the future and be there for the up and coming juniors, you know, help out with them and be role model to them and be someone that they can always talk to, because it's scary once you leave the USA and you travel around the world on the IGF tour. It's a whole different scene, and I would just like to be there just to give my advice and not be a coach, but, you know, just be
like
there
a mentor?
To yeah mentor exactly you know I would like yeah. to mentor the up and coming kids. And I always tell that everyone that's coming up that I'm always here for them to, you know, talk to, ask questions about and stuff like that. So no, I won't be in Nepal, but I'll just try to get back as much as I can to whoever needs help. Anyone, it doesn't have to be an American. Anyone who needs help, I would like to, you know, mentor. If any questions, I'm always open to answer.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, even leaving your impact as an inspiration and through, you know, sharing your daily life on social media, like, it inspires a lot of people. So I feel like you're already doing a lot to give back to judo.
Thank you.
through your user generated content. I don't even know if I use that in the right context there, but
yeah, you did. It's so weird. User generated content. I know. UGC it's called.
Awesome. I'm going to try and leverage that. I'm going to look into that.
No, tell all your friends to share your podcast. I'll share your podcast. I'll do it today.
Oh, thank you. I guess as we sort of finish up, what do you think is going to happen in terms of looking ahead and what the Tokyo Olympics is potentially going to turn out to be? Do you think it's going to go ahead in 2021, or what's your feel?
I really hope it goes ahead in 2021. I would be heartbroken if it didn't go ahead. But I like I said, like, I don't have any idea what's going to happen in the future with this, because I don't know if we're going to need a vaccine. I don't know when we're going to be able to actually do judo with, like, physical contact. There's just no real answers right now, and I really have no idea what's going to happen. And I really hope the competitions are allowed to come back, like, maybe end of the year, but nothing looks so great right now. So I'm just trying to stay positive and motivated as best I can and work towards the ultimate goal. But I have no idea what's going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah. And it's so funny when the ultimate goal is sort of shifting and not quite set in terms of, like, timeline or anything. So how are you dealing with that mentally? Like, how do you sort of keep yourself focused when you're not sure where to focus?
Yeah, I'm so used to, focusing on competitions. Like, I'm working towards competitions. So right now I'm just working towards, you know, being as fit as possible and being as ready as I can be for the next events, whether it be a training camp or a small competition. I'm just hoping that soon I'll be able to put my energy and motivation into something.
My last question is, at the moment, what's the thing you miss most about competition?
Oh, right now I miss everything about competition. Like, I'll take whatever. Like, I just want to feel the feeling of, like, walking in, you know, when you're walking with your headphones on and you have your trolley in the back, and I want to feel like that energy, like the energy of everyone warming up and the feeling that you get inside your stomach. I want to feel nervous again. I want to stand, you know, like when you're waiting to fight, like you're standing before the mat and you bow in. I just, like, I'm so excited to feel that, like, rush of energy and adrenaline and feel that, like, competition fight inside of me again. But that's what I miss, the rush. Can't wait till it comes back.
Hey there, my friend. If you enjoyed listening to that interview with Hannah Martin, follow her on Instagram. Her handle is @judohannah. While you're at it, why don't you follow the Judo Edit on Instagram as well? And here's a sneak preview for what is coming up in the rest of the season of the Judo Edit. We have a chat with Olympic silver medalist Travis Stevens. Now, I'm not sure yet if it will be the next episode or in a few episodes' time, but it is not to be missed. I would recommend that you go and watch Travis Stevens versus Ole Bischoff in the semi-final of the London 2012 Olympics. Once you see Travis's intensity, you'll understand why I am so excited to bring that episode to your ears. So, my friends, it's been a pleasure to have you listening, as always. Share this episode with someone who you think will enjoy it, and I will be back with more judo insights and stories for you in a few weeks. Until next time, this is Melissa Budiato signing off.